You're listening to After Images, a podcast for cinephiles that takes a deep dive into moving images. Each episode features a special guest who is invited to explore a film of their choice. After Images is hosted by film writers Franck Bouleg and Marisa C. Hayes.
Let's ride the Lost Highway for our 21st episode with Swedish comic book creator, illustrator, and visual artist Knut Larsson at the wheel. David Lynch's surrealist neo-noir Lost Highway is almost 30 years old, but we are still wondering who killed Dick Laurent. Starring Bill Pullman, Patricia Arquette, and Balthazar Getty, the film takes us on a wild ride akin to a Möbius strip, a deranged psychogenic fugue replete with doubles, bathed in a nightmarish atmosphere. The film opens in Los Angeles, where Fred and Renee Madison begin to receive VHS tapes showing footage of the interior of their house. As this faceless menace grows, the jealous Fred ends up murdering Renee and is sent to prison. But somehow, he gets replaced in his cell by Pete Dayton, a young auto mechanic whose story the film takes up. When he meets Alice, the blonde double of Renee, Pete enters a whirlpool of violence and betrayal that brings chaos to his life. Co-written with Barry Gifford, the film's mood oscillates between film noir and horror, playing with structure like a maze without an exit lane.
Knut Larsson, born in 1972, is a comic book creator, illustrator, and visual artist. He debuted in 1996 in the magazine Galago, and his first graphic novel, Canimus, came in 2001. Since then, he has published several books. The translation of their titles are The Engine Man in 2003, The Colonial Hospital in 2006, City of Crocodiles in 2008, and Isle of the Dead 2020. Larsson has also worked with animated film, and in 2004, his commercial short for Mayflower was awarded an advertising industry prize. In 2014, he wrote and directed Hypnagogia, Send Me the Pillow That You Dream On, a 29-minute short film. In 2016, Larsson was awarded the Adamson Statue. His work has been shown in several European exhibitions. Welcome to this episode of After Images podcast. We are delighted to be joined by Knut Larsson today in a discussion of David Lynch's 1997 feature-length film, Lost Highway. So welcome to the podcast, Knut.
Thank you, Marisa and Frank. Yeah, it's really nice to be here.
And let us know, why did you choose this film? What does Lost Highway mean to you personally?
Well, David Lynch is and has been my sort of hero artist for many, many years, at least since the early 90s. And so actually, I could have picked almost any of his films to have a discussion about, but Lost Highway has a certain special meaning for me, I guess. I saw it at an age, I was 25 at the moment when it was released, and it just hit me like few other films have. And I saw it about 11 times at the cinema when it was released. So and it's a movie that you can come back to many times. And but the strange thing is that I haven't actually come back to it so much in the recent years, because I saw it so many times when it was released, and I bought it on VHS when it was released, and I was full of it. I had really consumed it. So, but now, before this podcast, I had a good reason to return to it, and I must say, I got some new ideas about it.
That's so interesting, because recently someone else told me that in 1997 when the film came out. They were still quite young, and they returned to the cinema 27 times to rewatch
Wow.
the film. And what do you think it was, perhaps for young adults at that time who were so heavily affected by the film? Do you feel like there was something of the time that it captured, or do you feel that that's just too personal, maybe, to answer? That, of course, it's a subjective experience, but I'm just wondering what it is that people describe feeling really emotionally heavy when they watch the film, like being hit by a pile of bricks. Obviously, there was a very sensorial response to the film that was very strong.
Yeah, I have often thought about that, what it was that really hit me about the movie. But I think it was very personal for me. I was at a certain age, and I had just left a relationship, so I was sort of vulnerable, I think. And so I think my mind was just wide open for the experience, and it certainly is an experience, as we're going to discuss it. There's much to discuss, but mainly it's meant to experience you.
Do you think it's important to try to understand the film, or really just to let yourself go with it and appreciate the experience, to appreciate the ride?
I think you can go both ways. And since I saw it many times at cinema, some of the times were very more like intellectual. I try to grasp the solve the mystery and understand all the characters and so on. And some of the times I just saw it as a place to be, both horrific and sort of intoxicating and mysterious and wonderful. So it had these it has many different moods and mental states, I think.
I think,
So
sorry to interrupt, but I think it's very interesting what you said about the film being horrific, because very often people define the film as a sort of film noir transposed into the 1990s. But what really struck me personally was how much of a horror film it was, especially in its first third, which I found very difficult to go through. When I went to see it the first time in the cinema, I almost walked out because it was so, I don't know. I mean, it really played with elements that were difficult for me to deal with, and it felt oppressive in that house. Do you describe? Would you describe the film as a horror film, as a film noir, or as something that you can't put into a box?
I think, as in many of David Lynch's movies, he sort of floats between genres, and sometimes you feel that it's very much a horror movie, and sometimes you feel it's more of a thriller, and sometimes he even adds a comedy and so on. So I think, for me personally, it's not super important to put Lost Highway into a box. But I wouldn't say that it is purely a horror movie. I wouldn't say that. How should I say? It's a horror for the protagonist, certainly. He lives in horror. But I wouldn't say it's a horror movie in a genre sense. But as I said, he really toys with the different genres, and I think he's very happy with that. And I think that is he's not the only one doing this. There are, of course, other directors who work in a more, how should I say, auteur tradition, or where they don't really fit into the genres and try to create an maybe an art house genre. for themselves, so they can feel free and work in that. And
Absolutely.
yeah.
I know there's much to discuss about this film, excuse me, and there are many overarching themes we could go into, but I thought that maybe I would take our listeners back to that iconic opening shot with the opening credits, because for me, there's something really interesting in Lost Highway compared to Lynch's other films, which is a certain rhythm that's very frenetic that is set from the beginning of that opening shot. We feel that it's fast-paced. We have a very driving soundtrack of the era. And I think compared to some of Lynch's opening credits that can be very dreamy and slow and take their time in a meditative sort of way, that this one has really got almost a kind of rock star rhythm from the beginning that sets the tone for the film. And I'm just wondering what you think about that, how you relate to that opening shot on the road.
Yeah, I certainly love that opening. It's so mysterious and so cool. And with the David Lynch, no, I mean, sorry, David Bowie's song playing, I'm Deranged. It's it really sets the scene. And also now when I came, went back to the movie, I listened more closely to the lyrics, and also I looked up the song, "I'm Deranged" song from David Bowie's album "Outside," and I think that was an album that was supposed to be a musical or so of sorts, and I'm pretty sure he worked with Brian Eno, and they went to some. How do you say, some insane asylum, some institution for mentally disturbed people, I think in Germany. And they met a special person there that really inspired this song, "I'm Deranged." So I think actually that song is by far the most important song for the movie, not only in it, that it's sets the tone, as we said, but it also really deals with the sort of sickness that is portrayed. I have to say something more about my personal relationship with David Lynch. I actually met David Lynch a few times, and the first time I met him was by far the best and most interesting time. It was when he came to Stockholm. He came to collect prize. That was Stockholm Film Festival, that was awarding him a lifetime award achievement in 2003. And I thought that I have to see him. I don't know how, but I have to. So I by that time he had a website, and through this website you could get in contact with him or his crew. So I sent an email, and I told them that I was an artist and I had to see David. And actually, just half an hour or 1 hour after, I got a reply. They said that, yeah, sure, you can meet David after the ceremony. They said this and this hotel, like 15 minutes after the ceremony is over, you can meet David, but don't tell anyone.
Okay.
They said I could bring a friend, so I brought my best friend. And we went to the award ceremony and sneaked out afterwards and went to the hotel. And in the lobby, all of a sudden, there was David, and he had some sort of bodyguard with him, or I don't know if it was an actual bodyguard, but he was some man sort of guiding him. So we were very nervous, but But when David understood that we were the ones he was supposed to meet, he was, "Oh, you're the dot-commers," and he stretched out his hand, and it was by then already I'd been a fan of David for many years, so it was standing in front of him was very emotional, or and but very soon after I actually met him, things really fell into place, and he was a really cool guy, very how should I say, he felt very safe with himself, very secure, and a warm person, nothing like his deranged characters. So, but anyhow, we went up to his hotel room, and there were some other people there, but just five of us maybe, and they gave us some cheese and wine, and I asked David, or I said to David, I said, "Well, I've watched Lost Highway 11 times in the movies." He was like, "Okay," and I even said to him, "What? Sometimes I bring a date to that," and he said, "Ah, good. You'll see if they're ready for the sickness." Yeah, he was joking, and I think I may have tried to ask something, but he steered away the conversation. He don't really give any clues, as you might know. But he was a really super nice guy, and that really deepened my affection and admiration for his work.
It's so good to hear that, because I feel like that is the feedback we often hear, that he's a very warm and approachable person. And I imagine the people who are not fans of Lynch, that they envision someone very different, but in fact, he seems very down to earth and sweet.
Yeah, he is. And if you th really think about it, he has done a lot of movies, he has worked with a lot of people. You have to be sort of very both strong and gentle to really make it happen, and to make people trust you, and so on, to go into these dark worlds.
Yes, because indeed, being a filmmaker, being a director is something that is very collective, isn't it? I mean, you have to run a whole team. And I'm thinking of you as, I don't know, how do you describe yourself as a comic book artist or as a graphic novel? Well, how do you describe yourself?
I see myself as an artist and a comic book artist, mainly, and I have done some films too, short films and music videos, and yes, it's very collective to do a film compared to sitting in your studio writing a script or drawing a comic book. It's different, and the sort of almost, I wouldn't say shocking, but the biggest surprise for me when I did my first short film was that you almost paint or draw with words, because you have to give the crew words for what you're gonna do today. And the good thing is that also I can draw, so I did some drawings or storyboards and stuff, but mainly because there isn't always time to do storyboards, so you have to use words to describe stuff, and that's the big difference.
What do you think about the visual look of Lost Highway as a comic book artist, as someone who is used to drawing and thinking about the visual aspect of things?
Yeah, I think it's a really beautiful film, and it's like he has this idea about, I think the idea comes from painting, He has an idea about people in rooms have a certain number. Like in a room, the person in a room is seven, but like a chair or something is just maybe a two or a three. So he composes his imagery like a painter, very aware of people, furniture, and how to how to reduce almost to get the maximum effect. So it's very, come to think of it, it's almost like theater or something, because it's there's nothing in the frames there that isn't sort of important for the story or somehow. So but it's a beautifully shot film, really, really nice. Very dark often, but the daylight scenes are pretty bright, and yeah, it's really nice looking.
And as someone who has worked with sequential art in various forms, cinema, graphic novels, etc., what do you think about the notion of time and sequence in this film, the kind of elasticity of time, or what people typically describe as a Möbius strip, but we could also talk more generally about non-linear time and circular notions of time. I'm curious how you situate yourself with regards to time in the film.
Yeah, that was one of the most intriguing and impressing things when I saw it back in 97. It was the circular form of the story, and it really intrigued me, and it still does, actually. There is this difference between time in when you do comics and time in cinema. In cinema, time is really crucial. There are a lot of films that deal with time as a subject, or there is actually behind me, if you can see, since we're zooming, there is a La Jetée poster that I have illustrated for a cinema company here in Sweden, and La Jetée is also one of my favorite films. And in that movie, they're really dealing with time. And there was a time when I was really into La Jetée, and I was into Vertigo, and I was into 12 Monkeys, because these three movies they connect so beautifully. And Chris Marker is, I love his films. I haven't seen all of them, but a few, and I really love La Jetée. And I think there are really connecting dots with David Lynch's work and Chris Marker, and also some other French directors that I have come to know in recent years, like Jacques Rivette and Alain René and those guys. Because they are interested in time and in time loops, and I don't really know where that comes from, but probably it comes from philosophy and interest in ancient mythology and religions, and also viewing time as itself as cyclic, and seeing time, and seeing history repeat itself, maybe. And seeing things happening again and again. There are, I'm not sure if how it is with the Vedic, but I'm pretty sure that, yeah, come to think of it, there is this time of cyclic time in the Vedas. David Lynch, he talks about Kali Yuga, that the period we're living in now. And it's a pretty bad era. It's the worst, actually. And so But there are these very fixed time cycles that come one after the another. And so we're sort of trapped in time somehow. We're trapped in these cycles. And these cycles operate on the bigger scale, and they operate maybe on a small scale. And what we're seeing in Lost Highway may be cycled on the smaller scale or more personal scale. There are, of course, many different ways to see the Lost Highway cycle story. You can also see it as some sort of bardo from the Buddhist mythology, or a karmic process where a person who has committed the most horrible crime is being tested before going further. So that could be the case. But time and cinema is very connected. And about first La Jetée and then Vertigo. In Vertigo, there it's also one of my favorite movies. But and there is a connection between Vertigo and Lost Highway, because 2/3 into Vertigo, there's this shift. There's a shift where John Ferguson, the main character, James Stewart, he's in a sort of an institution because he's very worked out of the events that has happened. And he goes out in the streets, and it's like it's the world's very different. He's different, the world is different, and but he meets the same girl, but she looks different. And then he starts the process. This is a classic, so you've seen it, and many have seen it. But he starts the process of making the woman he meets into the woman he has known in the 2/3 of the movie. And these shifts reoccur in David Lynch's movies. It's a very dramatic and interesting effect where you have, as in Lost Highway, you have like 1/3 of a movie almost, and there's this shift. And the characters are different, and the identities are switched, and you don't know where you are, and that's really interesting.
And what's interesting is that it's not only, I mean, we are lost because we don't really understand at first what's happening, but the characters themselves don't understand what's happening to them. They don't understand anymore. They are, do they?
No, exactly. They are completely lost. And I remember when it came out also in 97, when I was very absorbed by the movie. I read an interview with David Lynch, and he said something like, "I'm like Fred in Lost Highway. I'm like Fred, lost in darkness and confusion." And I was so touched by it. I was so I felt so sorry for him, but meeting him made me also understand. Of course, he's lost in darkness and confusion, as we all are. But he's not. He's a pretty safe guy.
It's interesting to maybe connect the dots to the reference that you made to Buddhism and cyclic time, thinking about ideas of what is reality and illusion. I know that much has been said in this film about how we remember, how we transmit memory, and how we process memory. But maybe it's also interesting to think about this from the Buddhist perspective of illusion and reality and the different layers that one might have there.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very deceptive movie in many ways, because when Fred Madison says, "I like to remember things my own way, not necessarily what happened," I think he says that, and that could be a key line to a murderer's psyche. He doesn't want to remember his deeds. But it could also be a sort of a key to how we work, everybody, how our psyche work, that we remember things the way we want to remember them, not necessarily what happened. That I can really relate to, because seeing videos of yourself from a certain time can be sort of very annoying or disturbing, because it didn't feel like that when you were there. It felt like something totally different.
And talking about the video, what do you think about the use of the video by the mystery man in the film, and the way that the video at first is something that he's only filming the outside of their house, but all of a sudden it enters into their intimacy, up to their bedroom, and that they have this feeling of violation that goes along with it.
That is really, really interesting. And actually, as I said, when I now returned to Lost Highway many years later, that was maybe the most interesting revelation, the VHS, Video Home System. And David Lynch's themes are often about homes, or the unhomely, unheimlich, as you say in German. And that is the uncanny and the horrors that can happen in a home. He has had this theme many, many times. And so I think that VHS, video home system, is sort of almost a mantra for this movie. It felt like that now. And when the mystery man says, "You invited me. I'm not. It's not my custom to come where I'm uninvited," and that line is very mysterious. But for me, right now, it's when they put the cassette tape in the recorder. That's how he gets invited. So it's like in the Twin Peaks mythology, where the demons go with the electric lines. Here, the demons go with VHS. They travel through the tapes. So there's this very sort of almost childish aspect of it, that the evil is in the new technology. And also when the mystery man, he can sort of be two places at one time, and he can he there's this trick with a cell phone, and that feels both very like Franz Kafka, because I think it's one of his novels, The Castle, where there is a spooky scene where there are children singing in a telephone, and the main protagonist Kay, he's very feels this is very spooky. And so I think there's this theme of how new technology is sort of evil. And actually, now when we're introduced to AI images, I get this sort of same feeling about them. They feel evil. They feel not only they are evil because they're sort of the tech companies are vacuum cleaning the internet to build imagery for and paying no one, but also the way the characters look, and the they have extra fingers, and they look sort of strange, and it's very, very unheimlich, these AI imagery that we're seeing now.
I thought of it too when we were discussing this. I think there's almost a trend at the end of the 90s, although Lynch did it wonderfully, but there are other more mainstream films that are horror films that were dealing with this arrival of cell phones and different forms of surveillance technology as well. And I think, speaking of tonal announcements, because I mentioned the iconic road shot in the beginning, I think it's really another tonal setting when we first have this intercom situated at the outside, the exterior of the house, bringing the voice into the home in the similar way that the video footage brings everything into the home, into a very intimate setting. But we have that dichotomy that you spoke about, the exterior versus the interior, and all of the horrific acts that can happen away from the public eye inside the walls of the home.
And I just want to ask, are you familiar with J horror? I mean, with films like Ring from Japan and the use of the video cassettes?
Yeah, I've seen the American version of The Ring, and I came to think about it now when I saw Lost Highway again, and they came around the same time, I think.
Exactly. Yeah.
But one other thing that's really interesting about Lost Highway is it not only had a very deep impact on me, it had an impact on other directors, I think. Because Michael Haneke made a film called Cachet, and it's a really an homage or to Lost Highway in many ways, where this couple get these videotapes, and he's it was many years since I saw this film, but I think that in the end. You get the sort of feeling that it is the director himself that sends the tapes. It's Haneke himself who is the mystery man who sends the tapes. And that might be also the answer to who sends the tapes in Lost Highway. It's the director because he wants to create a mystery or a strange story for the characters he's set up.
And I think I've heard that it was Lynch's own house at the time. Do you know if that's correct, or is that something we should look up to confirm?
Yeah, I think it was a house on his street that he bought. I'm not sure. I don't think he ever lived in that house. I think he lives in a house close by, and he bought this house to probably to do the Lost Highway film, and then when he owned it, he turned it into a studio. So now it's his music studio. I'm pretty sure it's that case.
Thank you.
But that was a rumor around that time that he made this film in his home, and that just increased the feeling of, that it was a home movie in so many ways.
It's good to hear that it wasn't truly a lived-in home because there's a very clinical kind of empty feel to this house, at least as it's presented in the film, which I think adds to that layer of illusion, as if people give the appearance of living there, but there's not really any soul or character to that house.
And actually, there's a pretty funny line when Fred Madison says to Alice, his wife. Or is she called Renee? It's I get mixed up. He's gonna go to the club and he's gonna play his saxophone, and he says to, and she says she's gonna stay home, and he says, "What are you gonna do?" "I don't know. Read," she says, and he says, "Read? Read what?" And we haven't seen any books. The walls are completely clean, and so it's a sort of a strange meta commentary. Or maybe it could be also a commentary to that people don't have books so much anymore. I don't know.
But it definitely doesn't look like a lived-in house. What really struck me this time when I watched the film again, preparation for this podcast, was how much of the way it felt like a haunted house. It, the first third of the film is really a haunted house movie with all the tropes, and it feels like a maze of sorts that reflects somehow the mind of Fred himself. And perhaps since I've read your paper about it, I mean, it reminds me of The Shining in a way, with the maze outside the hotel. I think there is a certain echo there of the film The Shining.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I haven't really thought about the house itself in Lost Highway more than that it is very apparent a maze. But I haven't really connected to The Shining. But when you say it, it's really it could be really a haunted house, absolutely. I am really interested by The Shining and I believe that David Lynch is too. And I believe that a house can be a really good metaphor for the mind and how the soul sort of wanders in a house is how the mind wanders. And but it's there are some really nice shots in Lost Highway. When the characters are trying to figure out where they are in this maze or in this situation, and those moments are very quiet and sort of almost like a sort of a meditational state, and there could be a little music, Badalamenti music in the background or something, but those are very beautiful and sort of a bit scary too, of course, but it feels like the characters and I don't know, maybe the film itself is trying to think, try to it tries to figure out what's going on.
Are you familiar with the short film Meshes of the Afternoon by Maya Deren?
Yes, I've seen it on YouTube. Yeah, it's a really interesting, cool movie done already in the 40s, and it feels very much like a very similar to Mulholland Drive in the imagery and the mood, and also the I mentioned the Alain René, L'année dernière, en Marien Bad, the sort of where you present a murder weapon, a knife, or it could be something, and but you're not really sure who did it and if the person is really dead or it's sort of a strange game. It could be like the. It could be like a murderer who tried to conceal to him or herself that they have done this evil deed, maybe, or just toying with the sort of theatrical idea about when you present a gun hanging on the wall, it should be fired at the end. But I don't know. But they're really. It's really interesting, the film by Maya Deren. Yeah.
We know that Lynch is a fan, and speaking of weapons that are there, I think you were thinking of the knife that appears on the table in Meshes of the Afternoon and these doubles, right?
Yes, and I was also struck by how much it is confined within the house, as in the first third of Lost Highway, and you also have those shots from outside with the movement of the characters coming in. That reminds me also of those moments when they go and pick up the cassettes. I don't know, I was once again very struck by how close the two were this time when I watched Lost Highway again. And it would be interesting, I think, possibly to do a parallel watching of both to see what resonates with what.
Yeah, really, really interesting. Yeah, absolutely.
And what do you think about how Lost Highway sits within the filmography of Lynch, and especially I'm thinking of, by his own admission, that Lost Highway kind of takes place in the same universe as Twin Peaks. And I think by extension, we can assume that Mulholland Drive does as well, since it was initially imagined as a sort of spin-off television series for Audrey Horne.
Well, I haven't really connected it to Twin Peaks, but it could absolutely be in the same universe. I often see all David Lynch's films as small, sort of micro universes themselves, like they are planets in the universe, and so they're. And especially Lost Highway feels very much like maybe Eraserhead, that you're inside someone's mind all the time, and that the journey you're on is really inside one person. Absolutely, you really feel a connection to a lot Twin Peaks mythology, especially with the mystery man who is apparently some evil spirit who can travel through the modern technology, and as we have seen in Twin Peaks also.
Yeah, I'm very struck by that structure, the small bungalow that's in the desert of Lost Highway. And it really reminds me of these mysterious spaces like the convenience store in Twin Peaks. But I also thought the interior was a bit evocative of Beulah's cabin in season three of Twin Peaks. So it feels like this kind of architecture, maybe an evil sort of entity's space, keeps reappearing in these different universes.
Yeah, very interesting. It's such a lovely scene when they go into the desert there and go into that cabin, and how that cabin then explodes in some backwards way. It's very beautiful, but absolutely, David is telling a story through architecture often. He absolutely is, and it's a fantastic tool to tell a story just by how it's furnished or how it's the interiors. There's this really beautiful example in the Hitchcock movie Rear w Window. In the first minutes, you get there's a camera just going in the room, and we see some photographs and some furniture, and we actually get the whole backstory of the main character. So it's finally when the camera lands on James Stewart, we know who this guy is. So it's a very effective way to talk about to tell a story. Absolutely.
And there's
And
some.
also you can yeah, sorry.
Yeah, please.
About architecture, I'm really no expert in architecture, but it has struck me that there are some environments and some places that feel, I wouldn't say evil, but they feel like they are really bad places. And the sad thing is that probably it's all drawn in the architectural plans. It's just bad drawing. They shouldn't have drawn it in those proportions. They make people feel really bad. And the most horrible example of this is the fascist architecture examples, where they build in that people should feel very small, they should feel very insignificant, and they should be very impressed by these huge pillars and so on. And there are very positive architecture as well, where people feel very good and nice. wood, nice wooden cabins in Twin Peaks and stuff.
But this detail that Lynch is expresses through architecture locates the people and somehow entraps them on a spot in a very specific location. And I think there's a tension here in the film between the house, the cabin that are very static, and the Lost Highway itself, which is all about movement, as if the character was trying to escape. Do you think there might be something about this in the film? This will to somehow, you said earlier on that we are trapped in time, and he's a convict in a cell once again, behind bars, and there's this will to always go on the move and to escape.
There are two ways to see this. One way is that the murderer really wants to get out of his mind because that mind is a sick mind and it's a dangerous mind. So he really wants to escape that. But it could also be saying something about all our minds that we are sort of trapped in them. And David Lynch has been very outspoken about his interest in transcendental meditation. And I have myself taken the course and I have been a meditator for many years now, or at least 15, I think. I think actually that, sorry, I have to drink some water. I actually think that a way to get out of your mind is to meditate. It's a way to, David Lynch, he says that you expand your mind, and that can be a way to see it. But I also see it as a way to escape your mind, because when you meditate, you're not really trapped with your bad thoughts or good thoughts or any thoughts. You can really sort of escape yourself, your ego, and all that is you for at least 20 minutes, you know. And that is really valuable, to really good for you to escape your trapped mind for a short while.
So would you say that meditation is like being on the lost highway?
No, I would say that meditation is maybe going down the lost highway, but coming to a nice sunset.
There's light at the end of the tunnel.
Because the Lost Highway, I mean, we were talking about the cyclical nature of the film. Even though he escapes from his mind or from the cell, I mean, it's difficult to say, he remains trapped because of the loop. I mean, even though he's not in prison anymore, he nonetheless remains trapped.
Yeah, he's trapped, and I've sometimes I've thought about that he's in prison and he's on the death row, and we might understand that he's maybe being executed, and that w the whole movie is sort of in the blink of the moment when he's dying, and this is a sort of bardo trip he's on. And because when we see Fred Madison in the end of the movie, he's hunted by police cars driving down the Lost Highway. His head is sort of expanding in some very strange ways, and it could be like he's being in the electric chair, maybe there, maybe. But even though, you know, death wouldn't be his way out, you know, I think At least, if you believe somehow in karma, you know, he's going to be in some sort of hell, that Fred guy.
And what do you think about the women of the film, or more specifically, Patricia Arquette's dual performance and the kind of idea of the femme fatale who seems at first to be in a very submissive position, and then towards the end, it looks more like she's the one who's been manipulating certain situations to her advantage. Just wondering what you think about these dual characters.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I think Patricia Arquette is doing a good job at being this femme fatale. She's really the second time she turns up, she's called Alice, I think, the first time Renee. And the second time she's the one who's manipulating. And that is sort of that where the his sort of dream goes wrong, because if you see the story as a person who tries to escape his mind and tries to create a better younger self, and that's also an aspect, the sort of middle-aged man who creates a younger man, so it's a midlife crisis movie in a way also, but anyhow. He creates this younger guy who he's not an artist at all. He's a car mechanic, so he's sort of he's a simpler guy, but he's supposed to be a more happy guy, but he's not a happy guy because he's really confused. But anyhow, there's this flip side, and also the woman has to be more powerful or be more in control in this other world. So if Fred was more in control in the first world, in the second he doesn't have any control. And yeah, you'll never have me, she says, and walks out. But she feels very much like she's not a real woman. Not any of them are very much sort of projections, or they are very much, should I say, iconic images of women. So that seeing Alice and Renee, that really indicates maybe that we are in this sort of hermetic bardo state where all you see is sort of dream projections.
You could even argue, sorry.
Oh, go
You know,
ahead.
you could even argue that the names are indicative of this. I mean, Alice, of course, leads to Alice in Wonderland. I mean, going through the mirror, but Fred himself is called Mad Eason. There, you can already name. You have a clue about the fact that there's something wrong, that he's deranged, haven't you?
Absolutely. And David Lynch is he's really into names, that they should have the right names, and the naming is crucial for him. So I think there's no chance in the naming. And also it's interesting, I was thinking about that, the mystery man, he has no name. He's just the mystery man. And when a person in a Lynch movie don't have a name, that's very bad. Because if they don't have a name, they probably don't have a soul. And if they don't have a soul, they're just some evil spirit or demon or something.
Shall we talk for a while about what's new in your artistic life? What are you currently working on? What you've recently released? Please let us, our listeners, know about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I just released a book, a graphic novel called Necropolis. And I've been working on it for about 2 years, maybe. And it was released now on Sanatorium Förlag in Sweden. And there were some old ideas that married together with some newer ones. but actually, basically, it's about a comic book artist with a writer's block, and he has a deadline, and so I was trying to make a story that is it's very dreamlike, but I use situations and characters from my life. And it's not, I wouldn't say that it's personal, but I more take inspirations from the book business. So I've drawn a publisher, I've drawn an accountant, and there is this situations where you have a release party for a book, so it's over the years you sort of collect material because you're surrounded by so many wonderful and strange and funny characters, and I felt that because I haven't done a book like this before, I felt like I have to do it now. I have to talk some about both maybe my own situation, but also about the business, the book business, and the wonderful people in the book business.
So are there any evil characters, or no, it's all positive?
No, there are some evil characters. Absolutely, there are.
I thought
Because I created a sort of a angelic character who really supports the main character when he has a tough time. She looks like an angel. And then when I created her, I understood then I have to create a counter sort of an evil angel. So there are these forces that he's put up against.
So that's
But yeah.
Is there a project for the book to be translated into English possibly in the future?
Or French?
I really hope that it will be translated to English or French. I will certainly, it has just come out, so I will certainly send it to some of my publishing contacts. I've done one book in France, and I've done one book in the UK. So I really hope that this would find its way out to Europe or the world.
We'll look for that. When will it be out?
It's out now.
Oh,
It's
it's out
already
now.
out.
Okay.
It's already out. Yeah. So I've had a release party, and I've had some book talks about it, and it's both horrific to talk about your book, and it's also very satisfying at the same time.
Well, congratulations on the new publication.
Thank you so much.
And have you started to think about a next project, or are you still taking the time to savor the pleasure of having done this one?
No, actually, I'm working on a new book because I had a lot of material, and I divided the material into two parts. So actually, I'm working on the part two.
Fantastic.
So it's not really that kind of story, but it doesn't, it wouldn't necessarily really need a part two, but for me it needs, I have more things to say.
Speaking of more things to say, I'm sure that we could continue on for many hours speaking about Lost Highway, but maybe for tonight, to conclude, you know that we love this classic question at the end, which is there something you wish that we had asked you about Lost Highway? Is there something you'd like to mention that we haven't covered yet?
I'm not sure if we have anything more to say. We haven't mentioned Carnival of Souls. the 1960, I think it was released in 1960, because that movie is feels also very much of a kindred spirit to Lost Highway. I love that movie, and it has some wonderful bad acting in it.
But it has a wonderful mood, and well, I think it's the only film that that film director shot, and it's a masterpiece.
Yeah, I think so too.
Fantastic.
It's wonderful. So there are you can set up a movie night or a whole festival with some of these movies that can really, it's like they can relate to each other, these movies.
Intertextuality between all those works of art, yes. And I'm sorry, I just thought about this, but I should have, we should have, I should have started this podcast by asking, by telling you we've met before, haven't we?
But it's okay because the circular time, so it's okay that it comes now.
Thank you very much for having taken the time to be with us
Thank you.
for this discussion over Lost Highway. It was a real pleasure to chat with you. And
Thank
we're
you.
really crossing our fingers, hoping that your most recent comic book will be translated into English, French, or German, or any other European language so that we can read it very soon.
Yeah, I hope so too. And thank you so much for talking to you today. It was a real pleasure.
Thank you for listening to After Images. Please subscribe on your favorite podcast app and follow After Images Podcast on social media.